Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I bring guests that I feel have a wide-ranging spiritual perspective on the times and how the times are changing. Tonight's guest is someone who is a real expert, real down-to-earth person who's explored shamanism in many different levels. She's a Native American elder. Her name is Grandmother Barbara Three Crow. Welcome, Grandmother.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, there's so much I want to talk to you about, especially, well, one thing I want to tell people is I'm doing a conference in New York on October 9th and 10th with some Mayan elders and some crystal skulls, ancient Atlantean crystal skulls that will be present. And I hope that this will create an energetic shift in consciousness by bringing all these people together. Do you have anything to say about that, Barbara?
Well, I think that's pretty exciting, actually, about the crystal skulls coming together. It sort of fulfills some prophecy, I think, doesn't it?
Well, that's what they say. They say there's 13 that are supposed to come together, and when they do, there'll be a shift in consciousness. So this is what we're hoping to create, yes.
Well, I think that I think definitely a shift in consciousness is a good thing if it's in the positive vein, for sure, and it sounds like it would be.
With
a focus on and on those teachers, the Mayan, and is it the Aztec also?
No, it's Mayan. Don Alejandro, Humbatzman. These are Mayan.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Do you know these people?
I'm all for a shift in consciousness. I've been working on that myself. I think it's happening.
It does seem like it's happening in this program, and a lot of the work you've been doing are part of that. Just to tell people, if you want information about that conference, it's on crystalskullsevents.com. That's one website. You can also check my website, newrealities.com, and in the left-hand corner, there's a link to the event. So that's October 9th and 10th. And I hope you'll be there, too, won't you, Barbara?
Well, I'd love to be there, and I'm hoping to be there, absolutely. I have some questions, actually, that I'd like to ask, and some information that I'd like to bring to Don Alejandro, and
yes.
So I'm very curious as to what will unfold with that.
Well, this is where we can get into your work. I mean, Don Alejandro is the official elder of the Mayans, and kind of keeper of the tradition in a way. So you've been working with the Kogi and the Oaxaca?
The Arawako.
And some other tribes in South America there.
That's right. In the Sierra Nevada de Santa Marta in Colombia. And these people, the Kogi, the Arawako, and the Huiwa, and the Kankwarma, live in the heart of the world.
They call it the heart of the world. What do you feel when you're there? How is it as the heart of the world?
Well, you know, there are places, different places on the earth that are known to indigenous peoples as various organs and parts of the mother. And so this is not a new concept from the indigenous perspective. And I spent about 15 days there in the heart of the world. And it was quite profound. And to be with the people there, even more so, very enlightening, a huge teaching, awakening on many levels, and just very humbling. And energetically speaking about, well, the heart of the world, you know, to go way into the mountains and to be into this, be there in the silence and to be with the people there that are in relationship with the earth and with all of the elements, it felt, it touched me deeply in my heart. So, you know, I can say that for sure.
So the mission of these four tribes now is the specific thing we should talk about, because they went on this journey to reactivate these sacred sites and kind of re-energize the earth itself. That was my understanding of that journey with these people.
Well, that's correct. And I would like to mention the Elders Project, because that is what I and my associate Rick Harlow formed when we met some of the Kogi and the other elders in Pasto, Colombia last year. And when they asked us if we would help them to fulfill this journey that you're speaking about, it's called the Linea Negra, which is the Black Line Journey. And yes, it was specifically to re-energize and reinstate and to nurture and heal various places on the mother around the base of the heart, the Sierras. The black line, in a way, it's like you might think of it as an energetic boundary that contains the heart itself, and this place within those boundaries are where all of these indigenous peoples have lived for hundreds of years. And the journey is something that is part of their law of origins and very crucial, as is a lot of their other ceremonies, because their ancient knowledge has directed them, as their law of origins has directed them, to be the caretakers of the heart of the world and also to harmonize all of life. And so this is a big job, as you can imagine, and part of doing that was this journey to 54 sacred sites around the base of the Sierra Nevadas.
Well, there's a couple of things about that. So the Elders Project raises money for them. Is that part of the
thing? Yes, that the Elders Project is basically our goal is to support the various ceremonies, activities that are proposed by the Kogi Elders to help the people to support their culture and to bring them the other pueblos, the Arhuaca and the Wiwa and the Concuarmo, to basically to help them to reinstate their lost knowledge, because the those other pueblos have mostly been inundated with Western ways, whereas the Kogi had been for over 400 years isolated and hidden from all others. They were very remote.
The Kogi are probably the only tribe that the Spanish never got to, right?
Yes. They were, all of those people were originally part of the Tayrona people, which were basically, they had an ancient city in further down on the mountain, which when the Spanish came, there was a group that left and hid in the mountains and thought that they were no longer in existence. But in fact, they were, and they were hidden there, and no one knew where they were. They thought they were dead. And in the 90s, they appeared because they became very alarmed at what was happening to the earth and the resources, and they were very tuned, because they're very tuned in and they have the ability to divine knowledge and to commune with the, you might say, ancestors or the beings that live in the other realms, and they were receiving knowledge, but also they were visually aware of the changes in the high peaks in the mountains where they were. That's how serious the changes have become in the 90s there.
Environmentally, they were seeing the effects on their particular climate, huh?
That's right, and because in the Sierras, it mirrors the whole of the Earth. There's arid, there's rainforest, there's snow-capped peaks. So it's basically, in the heart of the world, it mirrors all of the climate, and they noticed dramatic changes, and they became very alarmed.
And also, psychically, you're saying they got the message to come down and talk to the world, right?
Well, I will tell you how I was told that because they became alarmed and they were very aware, they were concerned, and because they have a very profound and deep relationship with the elements and the earth, the Mother Earth, they actually asked the earth, they asked the mother, the great sacred mother, if they could expose themselves to warn the younger brothers. They call all others the younger brothers. And
right,
they're
the elder brothers, yes.
They are the elder brothers. They call us the younger brothers. And they asked for permission to expose themselves, and which they received. And when I heard that, it really was very emotional to imagine here they were, say, for over 400 years, and now they're asking to expose themselves because they want to warn us, the younger brothers, about what is really happening to the Mother Earth.
Well, so there was a film made called The Elder Brothers about their return to civilization. And can you tell us specifically what they said to us, the younger brothers, when they returned, like what we should do and how we should act? And
well, that was the Elder Brothers' message. And that was in the 90s. And happened to see that film, perhaps many of your listeners also, and to everyone that I speak to, that film touched them so deeply. And I guess you might say, never in my wildest dreams would I imagine then that I would be in association with these people. But here I am, the way spirit works.
But people didn't see the film. I mean, what did the Kogi say to the world when they came down? Because I didn't see it, and I should
have. Yes, well, they talked about the changes that they were seeing, that the snow was melting in their areas, in the Sierras, in the high places in the Sierras, that the snow literally was melting and receding, and this is something that they had never, ever experienced. There were places that were dried, which would never be dried. The you know, the trees, the waters were drying, and they felt that the younger brothers needed to wake up and understand the seriousness of this, and they were asking us to awaken and to take responsibility and to be aware of the seriousness then of what was happening. And so now we come to 2010 and the journey, the Linea Negra journey around the black line, the base of the Sierras. And we do have a YouTube that will be going up on the Earth Action site. It's not up yet, on this journey, and so now we come all these 20-some years later, and on the film we walk with them, we go with them to these sacred sites to see their care, and they're leaving the pagamentos, which are sacred offerings, their prayers, their ceremony, and the journey that they took, and to some of the places that are now inaccessible, that are now desecrated. Now, these are sacred sites that they have been traveling to for millennia, and now they haven't been to some of these. They haven't been in over 20 years to some of these sites. And it was quite sad to see when they approached certain places, like right at the ocean, there was a beautiful, very large rock formation that was one of their special sacred sites. And upon that now sits a huge building, a big cement building, plopped right on this beautiful, beautiful stone formation.
And what was their reaction to that?
Oh, it was they just stood there. They were walking down the beach, and the camera's following them, and then they just stop, and they're just looking, and they just, some of them turn around, and they turn around again as though, well, wait a second, are we in the right place? Or, and they're just standing there. And then Mama Norberto, who is the elder, he's the spiritual geographer of the Sierra Nevadas, and he is the one that had asked us if we would help them fulfill this journey. He began to talk about what happened here, about how they would always, for centuries, have been coming there to leave their sacred offerings, how this place is very sacred. It's at the mother, the waters of the mother, and how, look at now, he said, there's walls and walls and walls, and he just, he has his arms up in the air, and he's, it's just, it's pretty difficult to watch this. And there were several experiences like that where they had to go to other water areas where there would just be garbage and old tires and things floating in the water, or there other sacred rock places where there was graffiti. And you can look at these, you can see these stone formations are quite unique, quite beautiful, stunning. You could understand that they would, you know, they would be very special to, in a way that would show that these were sacred, that these were special, that the beings, the spirits of the stones, the stone people, are very powerful and important and sacred. So this was what, you know, what was going on, but they do their work irregardless. You know, they know that they have to continue following the law of origins irregardless.
Well, what does that mean, the law of origins? Can you explain what you mean?
The law of origins basically is their purpose, their ceremonies. It represents their place and place on the earth, their purpose on the earth, the generations, their generation's purpose, and it covers a lot. There are these ceremonies that I'm talking about. There's certain the whole tradition and their culture, their language, their land, everything, the ceremonies that they do. This is based on their law of origins, which originated in the beginning of time.
Is that specific for them, or is the law of origins really for everyone?
I call it our original purpose, but it's based on the same, because I feel, and I know you would agree, and I know others would too, that we all have been given a job to do. And in a way, that's their job. Their law of origins is to harmonize the earth and harmonize and balance all of life. Well, I believe that ours is also, and I think we've forgotten, or we've gotten sidetracked, or we've gotten our priorities mixed up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we do have a law of origins as well. We may call it original promise, or our original purpose, you know. But I think it's based on the same. We are all, you know, we are all living on the Mother Earth. She is our home, our mother, and we all are caretakers or were meant to be caretakers.
But do they feel, I guess they do, that the things will change, that things can change, that and they're changing it? I mean, what's their feeling when they see their sacred land desecrated? I mean,
well,
is there hope?
In one of the shots, they turned to the camera, and one of the mamos, they're called mamos, they're elders, traditional elders, M-A-M-O, mamo. They asked, they looked directly at the camera and asked for our help. The younger brothers, we need your help. Now I'll tell you a little information here, a little story. Well, it's not really a story, it's a fact, but in January of 2009, I received a letter from the Kogi, and that it came from Pasto, from Kahujali, who was a shaman there and who's very much connected to the Kogi. And he is the one who originally invited me to Colombia, actually, to be there with the people and to do ceremony and teach. Anyway, he received this letter and forwarded it to me. And you have to understand, as in any community, there are levels of elders. There are elders, and there are elders, and then there are really elders.
Right.
And so the mamos, they are called collectively mamos, which are the traditional elders. And they have their meetings or conferences or gatherings, and they, during those periods of time, they work with elements, they work with divining to receive guidance, and they have these particular kinds of abilities to do that. And they could meet for days or weeks until they resolve certain things or receive certain guidance. And during a particular meeting, some of the mamas were speaking, and they were remarking how they felt that it's too late. We have gone beyond hope.
Uh-huh.
And that they should bring on the hecatomb. Now, the hecatomb, or hecatome, is, in Spanish means, it's actually an ancient Latin or Greek word, means sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm reading this, and I'm, of course, becoming very concerned, because I understand and know that for centuries they have been following their law of origins and working to harmonize and balance all of life, and now I'm reading that some of them are saying it's too late, we've gone beyond hope. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what should we say then if they're saying this? And
right.
Then I read further, and there were a few mamas which hadn't spoken yet, and they remarked finally, they said, it is not up to us to say that we should stop or bring on the hecatomb. It is up to us to continue with our sacred works, and it will be the decision of the Great One. Now, I'm just paraphrasing here because I don't know the word in their language, the Great One or the Sacred One or the Creator. It is up to that being to make that determination. We need to continue our...
What would it mean to bring on the hecatomb? What would that look like?
Well, if the hecatomb means sacrifice, if they are holding life in harmony and balance energetically through their ceremonies and energetically the way they use that ability, and if you imagine, let's envision holy people or shamans standing on the mountain holding their hands up in ceremony for millennia to hold all of life in harmony and balance, and then they finally say, you know what, this isn't working. Let's just go back down the mountain. So they pull their hands down and they turn away. And that would create a tremendous, shift, a monumental shift in what they had been originally doing for centuries.
Wait, so they are holding the harmony of the earth in place, and in a way they feel their work is not satisfying, is not fulfilling.
Well, it's not working. It's not too late.
So they
would
just
beyond hope. Now that was some of the mamas that said that, and I'm assuming that there, as I said to you, why I started out by saying there are levels of mamas. There are elders, different levels of elders, and so it would be in a way, as if you look at the church, there's the Pope, and then there's the ones beneath him, and the cardinals, and it goes down and down, further and further into that structure, that system. So if you have some cardinals who are saying, well, this isn't working, our prayers aren't working, nothing's happening, or things are falling away and things are falling apart, but the Pope says, it's not up to you to say that. It's up to God. God will say if it's too late. We need to keep praying. Our work is to pray. Our work is, so with the mamos, their work, with the Kogi, Arawaka, Wiwa, and Kankwama, their work is to do the harmonizing and balancing with their ceremonies, with the Linea Negra, with the dance, the Tane dance that they haven't done in 50 years because they were not allowed. That was banned by the religiosos. So we're trying to help them to reinstate this dance, which is very significant. These are, if you look at the way of ancient people, the way of indigenous people, and the knowledge that they have, the ability that they have to work with the elemental world, to work with the unseen, the unknown, and the people, the Kogi, hold a knowledge that is beyond our comprehension and ability, too. So this is something we have to sort of stretch our thinking about a little bit, our perspective, and kind of step back and understand what they're understanding, what they're seeing, what they realize, and what they know.
Is it beyond our ability? I mean, aren't we all equally able with the right training to tap into those levels and levels of awareness,
I think it is. We have that ability. I absolutely do. And I think that we have strayed away from it. I think that we may not understand or believe it, or we may fear it, or we've been trained to fear it, or we doubt it. But I definitely know we have the ability.
Right. So they haven't forgotten, in other words, and so it really seems like there is a delicate balance happening on the planet right now, that we are really all have to wake up to this shift. So, I mean, from the Kogi and the other tribes, what would you suggest people do to help bring the world back into balance?
Well, this is interesting you asked that question, because when I returned from the heart of the world, I several things happened. First of all, it was quite a challenge to get back into the world because, back to the airport, to the traffic, to the cell phones, to the noise, to that intensity, it took me a while to get myself back here in that way, on that level. And one thing that I realized from the very beginning when I met them in 2009, actually, was I'm not doing enough. I mean, I pray daily. I lead ceremony. I do ceremony. I'm very involved on that level, that my spiritual life is my life, my whole life. And I came to realize that I am not doing enough. Now, this is me personally. This is what I realized. I felt very humbled by what I saw. My teacher for 14 years was Wallace Black Elk and mm-hmm. Lakota Elder, and he used to say, every breath is a prayer. Every step is a prayer. Either you're praying or you're not. And when I was with the elders in the heart of the world, I saw clearly every breath and every step that they took was a prayer and in relationship to the Mother Earth and all of life. And their level of communication, of prayer, of ceremony, of just being one with that was quite profound and very humbling. So they live daily lives, but there's something different. It's something different, you know. And I think for us, I think we have to make an effort. It's more difficult for us because we're here in this world. We're like spiritual warriors. We're not living on a mountain isolated. We're not in some cave where we can, you know, just be meditating or atoning. You know, we're here in this busy, chaotic world. We're pressured. We're stressed. We have to make more of an effort if we want. You ask me what we can do, and I've come to realize that we need to make more of an effort to be in relationship to the Mother Earth.
Well, what do you suggest? I mean, what could someone do to make an effort? What action would they take?
Well, just going out on the earth, going to the water, and being with these elements, it gives you something. There's a profound healing that you will experience to have that relationship. You're building a relationship with the energy, with the element, with the spirit of. That's one thing. When I came back, I started called a Harmonizing the Earth meditation community, where on a regular basis we sit in a circle and I place various elements in a formation, however they ask to be formed. There are crystals, there are stones, and I'm doing this because these are the elements, some of the elements that the Kogi work with. We sit in a meditation. We come together with an intention, with a heart intention, to send the heart, love, harmony, balance, and to those elements in front of us in the circle and to the Mother Earth. Sometimes we specifically note a place on the earth where there's trouble or disasters may be happening, and this is something we might focus on. So we go into a meditation, and we hold a meditation and a silence, and it's become very quite profound doing this work in that way with the intention of helping the Mother Earth herself and all of life, the various elements. These are the things that the Kogi work with, and they have the reciprocity that they live by is part of their law of origins as well, meaning that they go to the highest peaks in the Sierra Nevadas and they gather significant elements. Certain stones, perhaps, or tree bark, or fungus, or seeds, plants, and they carry them down to the ocean. And these become sacred offerings to the mother, the waters of the mother. And then they carry from the ocean, from the mother, various shells and stones and things from the mother all the way up to the highest points in the Sierras. So their work is about renewing and restoring the energies of the mother from the highest peaks to down to the base into the waters. The reciprocity of their lives flows in every area. they have the feminine and the masculine relationship that is very, to me, very unique and missing in our culture.
Talk about that, because somebody I talked to had a question about the equality of women within those cultures, and if you can talk about that, then that might answer some questions. So, yes, please tell us.
Yes, well, the Kogi have the feminine principle, which I think you have on your site. I sent it to you. They can
it's on my website, that article, yes, under shamanism articles, yes.
That's right. And but it's quite beautiful and significant for us to understand. To them, everything was created by the mother, by the great sacred mother, and all of life. And she dreamed and thought everything into being. And so when in their lives, for instance, everything is balanced between a feminine and masculine aspect, meaning a home, a house, a hut, a concuarma, what's called, will be built. One side would represent the feminine, the other side would represent masculine. So there's wood, there are trees to them that are female and other trees that are masculine. So the house is built with both of these, but one on, you know, the female on the one side and male on the other, to create a harmony between male and female in their home. The pathways that they walk upon, there represent, again, one side is the feminine, the other side is the masculine. So there's a reciprocity there. In the gardens, the women will plant the seeds, and the men will hoe up the earth. The women are planting the seeds because they are givers of life. When they weave, the men weave a certain way, part of the what they're weaving, and the woman twists and weaves her fingers and the fabric another way. Again, so they're both working on something together. And that, again,
you're saying this creates a balance throughout their culture of the masculine and feminine, throughout all aspects of.
That's right.
Uh-huh. All right.
So it's quite, you know, because they are in such a relationship with the Mother Earth, you know, and renewing her blood, for instance, with garnets. I brought them some garnets, and they said this is represents the blood of the Mother, and they would make pagamentos, their spiritual offerings, with these pieces of this garnet and take them to certain places, sacred sites, where they know she's weak. Her blood is weak. Her life force is weak. And so elements that they work with represent different various things in relation to the mother. For instance, like the sap in the trees or the fishes in the waters. So there's certain elements. Could be a specific shell. They have this knowledge that is so ancient and deep. So that it's not just, oh, let's just take a shell and say, this is for you, Mother, for your water, or for your life, or for the sap. No, they know the particular shell, or stone, or crystal, or element that is specific to renewing and regenerating the life force of the Mother on different levels.
They know it because they can see the energy. Is that the thing? They see it.
Yes. And this is part of their law of origins. This is what they have received, this guidance. And Mama Norberto and many of the other mamas, the elders, they hold this knowledge. And this is one thing that the Elders Project that we have formed are helping to support this through the video and also through a recent book that we've helped them to publish with the words and wisdom and teachings and this knowledge of some of the oldest traditional elders, and some of them have now since passed away. But this is something that we're trying to help support them with so that they can pass this on to their generations.
Mm-hmm. So is that what's happening now with them? I mean, what's their long-range plan? I mean, I guess this is sort of it, but are they going to do continuous ceremony? Is there a report about how the world is changing for them? Do people correspond with them about that, you know?
Well, I think it's not easy to correspond with the Kogi. There are some that we're in connection with. There are some that are very remote that are still hidden way, way up into the Sierras, and they do not have any contact at all still. They don't have any connection to media. They have nothing, no relationship beyond their pueblos. And recently they asked for information about what was happening in the world, in China, Pakistan, Russia, because, well, you know, I'm only assuming that because of the way they are capable of finding out this information without reading a newspaper, they're asking for more specifics on what's going on so that they can determine the course that they need to follow.
Uh-huh. So they pick up psychically. I mean, they're tuned in to higher levels of consciousness that they can then, you know, work with in some ways, right?
Yes, that's correct. And I just want to address what you asked me before about ourselves, you know, and I believe that we also have these abilities, but they have been unpracticed or forgotten, or there's a great doubt about our capabilities. And I think that this is something that I've been talking about in the new paradigm, in relation to the new paradigm, and that I believe that we are being propelled into this higher level of enlightenment, where we will be reinstating, or we need to reinstate, this ancient knowledge that is really, in a way, it's in our DNA, and it's a cellular memory that we need to awaken, that where we can be more responsible, more active in manifestation, creating co-creators that we are, more harmonizing as the elders are doing, and actually doing this sacred works that I believe we are being asked to do.
Well, I liked what you said just there, that this sort of psychic, intuitive, spiritual essence is in our DNA. Now,
yeah.
I think if we could show that to people, if we can somehow prove or demonstrate that this is really the essence or piece of us, that could shift consciousness. Because I totally agree with what you say, that somewhere this higher knowledge is embedded within our very physical being, you know?
Yes, it is. And I think if we look at the bigger picture, we could certainly thread back through history and perhaps find maybe the moment or the timeline of when this began to be attacked or removed from us, or I call it, now people are using this term, dumbing down, you know, and I think that this has been going on for centuries within our own cultures, and I think that there is an awakening happening, and sometimes people feel something, but they don't know how, they don't know what it is, they don't know how to do it, they don't know what this means, and that's why I say, to begin, if people can go into nature and be quiet and just look and listen and open their hearts, things will begin to shift for them, and they will become more grounded and more in energetic relationship to that source of this ancient knowledge, because that is really the source.
Well, I agree. I just spent a couple of days in the desert sleeping under the stars, and I felt reconnected to something.
Uh-huh.
You reestablish your your direct link to the mystery that nature is, that we are. There's a kind of a re-energizing of our sacred being by being in nature. So I recommend that too, and I think you're saying that's what the Kogis are encouraging as well. Because it's hooking us into something.
And I think also that we are being asked to really, really become more aware of ourselves on the earth and the impact that we have, but also the choices that we're making. And I believe, and I've always believed, that we can make a difference and that we are, in a way, unaware of how we are affecting all of life.
Right. And we, even though we're unaware, that's not a good excuse, because we are affecting, you know, the earth. Each one of us has to realize our impact. So, you know, we're all responsible. And
I think that people are ever more feeling frustrated or pressured, and we can certainly, you know, name all the reasons why. But people come to the point of feeling hopeless and helpless. And I tell people, we are not helpless, and it is not hopeless. And
right.
We have to understand what that means when we say we're not helpless. Because what people tend to do is look on the outside for others to change their behavior, or others to make it right, or the government to get it together, or whatever. And it's not about others. It's about us, our own self, you know. And that's where we have to begin. And we have to determine what it is that we want to manifest, create, and bring into ourselves and then out into the world. And this is power. You know.
Well, that's what your workshops are about, your particular teachings, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, that's true. It is.
So
yes.
How do you do that? How do you work with people in your work?
Well, the work that I've been doing for the last 20 years came through a vision given to me during a time that I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And actually, I was told by spirit that I was going to be diagnosed with breast cancer. And in a way, this relates to kind of what we're talking about, Alan, with people feeling that everybody else should change and everybody else needs to make things better. But I was being asked psychically by some guides to begin to change things in my life and take steps towards bringing women into circles and begin to teach them. And I wasn't about to do that. I was on a whole other journey. I was happy and satisfied with where I was going. And this came out of the blue. This was sort of like, frightening to me in a way. It was like I didn't understand why I was being asked to do this, but the pressure was quite, quite obvious and very strong. But I was basically ignoring it. And then after 2 years, I heard a very strong message that I was going to be diagnosed with breast cancer, and that did happen. And during that time, I was very, I was steadily meditating and taking time to do self-healing and along those lines. And one day I experienced this quite profound vision, and then I was guided during that time to go into the nearby mountains to search for a stone that I was guided to find, and proceeded to find that particular stone, and then go back to my studio where I was guided again to paint certain markings on the stone, and then it turned into this really amazing shift where I felt myself, you know, leaving my body, and I heard chanting, women chanting, and I was compelled to follow this. And one part of my mind was saying, this is really crazy, you know,
right.
How we do. But yet we're doing it, right? And this is
right. Really
weird. This is strange, you know. But when I finished, I felt such peace, and I knew that I had just completed some kind of a healing ritual. I didn't know what the source was. Actually, I found out many years later about what that source was. And because it was about a stone, and there are spirit stones, and which I now work with, and they will often, a spirit of a particular stone will often appear to you in a vision. It could be a mask looking, like a mask kind of a face, and that's what appeared to me. It appeared like a mask, a face in front of me. And that would be the spirit of that stone, which I was guided to find in the mountains. And they will come to people who are ill and need healing. And that's what happened. So
the stones have particular consciousnesses around them. You're saying that that are here to help. I mean, the stone carries the energy of something beyond the stone, of course. I mean, and that's...
Well, you know, if you believe...
I do.
If you believe that everything has a spirit, that's what we're talking about. Every element has a living spirit. And that spirit within those elements can be communicated with or communicate with you or activated through your working with them or using them in a way that is, you know, in a manner that you're guided to do that is respectful to use the spirit of that stone or anything, any other element. And so this is what unfolded for me, and then I began to call women into circle, and I received a prophecy about the sacred feminine, the return of the sacred feminine, that this was crucial in the coming times, that as the earth changes escalated, that we needed to reinstate a balance between the male and female, masculine and feminine in our cultures, and that the renewal and the healing of the sacred feminine ultimately would begin this process. And then it would not be about women leaving men behind. It would be about women being able to sort of lead the way or open that heart, open that doorway to help their brothers, husbands, you know, their fathers and so on. So it's about, here we are back to that reciprocity of the balance of the male and female that the Kogi and the other pueblos up there, the other indigenous people, hold very dear, very sacred.
Right. It sounds a lot like what the Kogis are doing is reactivating the feminine, the connection to the earth herself as a being.
That's right.
And
so
that
within
was,
our own selves, of course, you know, we have a masculine feminine self. And in our culture, we're quite out of balance in many ways. And we've had a lot of, you know, we've had a hard time, men and women together, you know. Our cultures have set us against each other in so many ways. And this is unfortunate because we really need to stand side by side with reciprocity, with compassion and love and forgiveness in order to create and manifest peace in the world. How can we have peace and harmony when there's such violation against the sacred feminine? Of course, it's easy to violate the sacred feminine, the Mother Earth herself, when all that violation is going on all around us. You know, but men suffer greatly also. But it's interesting because the prophecy speaks of women healing the sacred feminine within ourselves so that we can open our embrace the men. embrace the male so that we stop the dance. I call it, let's stop that dance, that mad dance that we get into with each other, you know. Somebody
What prophecy is that? That you're mentioning?
I was told that my work with the women is in alignment with the return of the sacred feminine, and then that's what I heard. And then years later, I also began to read of other indigenous people speaking about the importance of the sacred feminine, the reinstating of the sacred feminine, and that healing.
So you healed yourself through following your guidance, going into nature, trusting the earth and the elements, and you just were open enough to hear the inner message, and you lead other people through that as well now, right?
Well, I just want to make a, to point to the fact that it took me 2 years of resistance and stubbornness and fear to actually, and the only way it happened for me to do what I was being asked was because the spirits hit me with a 2x4. I was diagnosed with breast cancer as they told me I would be. And to me, I feel that it was the best thing that ever happened to me because it brought me to this very point today, to where I am here speaking to you, meeting you, you know, and getting
talking
to know
to
you
everyone
and other
else.
People of like minds and all the beautiful work that we're all doing together. I mean, it's really been quite an amazing journey. But this was totally unknown to me during that time. Why I'm telling you this is because I think that people, out of our fear and resistance, we aren't listening, or we're afraid to listen to that guidance and also that innate memory, that ancient knowledge, that DNA memory, cellular memory within us that is really working hard to awaken us. And sometimes that means change. Sometimes it means big change, and we're afraid. We're afraid of that.
But I'm also asking, you can help facilitate other women and men as well in a similar work. Is that part of what you're doing now?
Yes, I've been doing that for 20 years.
Okay. So you lead them, and then, like, if they... I mean, you encourage people to trust their visions and go out into the wilderness and listen and tune in, because nature is here to heal us. It's here to provide for us and comfort us and give us everything we need, really, essentially. And we just have to get into alignment with that.
Well, I think we have to, especially now. I think people would understand when I say this. Is that we have to get our priorities straight. And all along we've been told that there are certain things that we need, you know, to focus on, and these are our priorities, but they're really not. Because what's really our priority is our spiritual well-being, our health, the health of our people, the health of ourselves, our children, the health of our families, the health of all of humanity, and the health of the Mother Earth, our waters, everything. This is our priority, and so the out-of-balance focus of our priority has been basically an agenda, you know, or we've been trained that way. It's kind of mixed up. And people are feeling hollow. They're feeling lost. They're feeling, is this it? Is this all there is? I'm on a treadmill. I don't feel happy. I don't feel peaceful. I'm angry and I'm frightened, you know. And we need to get our priorities. This is what the Kogis are asking us, is to really see clearly, understand what is really happening. It is all about our lives, our health, our well-being, and that relates to the earth and the waters, the air, everything. And our priorities have been, you know, going in the wrong direction. So how can we start to change the priority, you know, is the, you know, like I said, is to be more careful, to be more loving of ourselves and others, to be on the earth, to receive that healing and that love, that profound uplift. As you explained, it's a renewing. It touches you deeply, but personally, each one of us has to figure out what is hurting us, what is killing our spirit, and what do we want? What do we really want our future to be?
Well, we want it to be happy and healthy and enjoy, I would think. That's really what all this destruction is all about, so people can live in harmony, although they're going about it sort of very indirectly. And what you're saying, what the Kogi are saying and others, it's, you know, all the things people are looking for can really be found in their nature and in the nature of the world, you know?
Yes, in their nature, in their own spirit, their own spirit. They need to feed their soul. The way we feed our soul is to go to the mother, is to go to the water, to go to the trees, go to the earth. We feed our soul by being more, you know, open, more heartfelt, have more peace in our own hearts. And this is the shift that we are all working towards. And this is more and more people, as you and I were talking about, more and more this is happening. And but there are some who are still kind of walking around in a circle saying, I don't know what to do, or I'm kind of lost, you know.
Right, and there are people.
They can make a change. They need to go into their own heart, into their own self, and ask what it is that their spirit needs.
And that will start to really awaken. If people can be quiet and listen to their spirit talking to them. And I think what I'm getting from what you're saying is that nature helps the voice of our spirit to be heard louder somehow. It adds to a resonance because that's where we come from. We come from nature.
That's right. We're not separate, but we've been trained to be separate from that life force. The earth is a living entity, living sentient being, giving constantly that life force, that joy, that beauty, the breath of life, the water, everything she's giving. And we just need to be with that. And that fills our soul. That feeds our soul and renews us. And it's so healing when people allow themselves to do that. And it doesn't mean you have to quit your job. It means you need to find some space for your soul, feed your soul.
Well, people think religion feeds their soul. I mean, it might for some people, but it's really what you're saying, in my experience, that does feed the soul. It's connecting with the earth and the mysteries.
Let's look at what we talked about earlier, for instance, what is in our DNA, our ancient knowledge. Let's look at that ancient knowledge. The ancient knowledge, or the ancient peoples, they were our relatives, and many of us lived in those times, you know, if you believe in reincarnation. So it's an innate part of our nature to be one with the earth. In the ancient cultures, all ancient cultures, whether you were Celtic or Aboriginal or Indigenous or, you know, all the ancient cultures were in tune with the elemental world. That is how they lived. They were closer to the earth. They were closer to the elements. They were more tuned into the stars, to the cosmos, to the weather, to the moon cycles. This was part of the ancient cultures. And there was a knowledge there that was very significant and very, very important. And through technology, of course, and advancements, we've gotten away from that. We've lost that connection, but it's innate within us. So it's really calling us. And this is the way really to heal and to find that peace, the peace within us. And yes, religions do that to some, for some people, but what I'm talking about is the ancient wisdom and relationship has nothing to do with rules, regulations, sinning, devil,
right.
Evil. It's all about, you know, renewal and peace on the earth and the relationship to the elemental world. So there's no rules and regulations and there's no pointing fingers. It's a personal experience.
Right. That sounds so refreshing and healthy and joyful, and everything you're saying just sounds so core to our essential being. I mean, in a way, your work is really parallel to the Kogi. They're doing it for the planet, and you're bringing it down to the individuals. It's really in alignment, it seems like, doesn't it?
Yes, I think so. But, you know, again, I want to just reiterate about my awareness and my awakening of the, and this is personal also, again, my personal spiritual life and my walk here and my journey and the work that I'm doing really presented very strongly to me that I need to even do more, because of what I see the Kogi and Arhuaco and Wiwa doing for us. They're doing it for us, too. They're not just doing it for themselves or the heart of the world. Of course, the heart of the world, you know, relates energetically to the whole world, and that's what they specifically work with. And they say that. They say everything we plant here, we put here, the pagamento, the sacred offerings, and our journey and our ceremonies are all for the heart, but then the heart has her energy lines that go throughout the whole world. So their concern and their prayer and their daily minute-by-minute ceremony, their relationship, is on that level for all of life. And I think mostly we don't think along those lines. I mean, maybe a little bit we might do that, you know? But for me personally, I realize we have a big responsibility. I do too. We all do. And they're taking a big responsibility they have for centuries, and we need to step up to the plate and take part and align our energies along with theirs, along the sacred web. We need to heighten that prayer, that love, that energy, our voices, whether you sing or drum together or by yourself or go out and offer a little food to the waters or a little cornmeal or tobacco, with a prayer for gratitude and renewing the life of Mother and all beings. So we do need to take a responsibility, because it is our own law of origins, like we talked about earlier.
No, it's very beautiful the way you describe it. It's to honor the earth and to honor nature. I think presenting offerings is a nice thing. Feeding the planet, giving back, being open to an energetic response from nature. If everyone did that, I think we could shift the vibration of the planet.
I believe that we can. I mean, I totally believe that we can do that. And I think that we're so used to and have been so trained just to take without reciprocity, and just a little reciprocity can make a huge difference, you know.
Yeah.
Just to be grateful and say, here's a little bit for you, Mother, here's a little bit for you, the tree people, you know. Just be more conscious. That's, again, still part of our DNA. That's touching and pulling forward the ancient knowledge that is innate within us, and that's part of what our ancestral lineage, what they had all taken part in.
No, it's great talking to you, Barbara. I really appreciate this message. It's a great reminder to me, and I hope to people who are listening. So,
Thank you.
Just to wrap up, if people want to support the Kogi, what should they, and those, and the other tribes, and,
yes.
and your mission, where
yes,
should they
the
go?
Elders Project. They can connect with Earth Action. It's one word, earthaction.org. Mm-hmm. And click on the Elders Project. They can find out a lot of information. There are wonderful photographs there of the people and of the journey and the women and the men and the children in the pueblos, and information on the various projects that we're helping them with, that we're asking for support. We're following what the Kogis ask us. So there are four or five particular projects that they need help with, and this is all about their people, their land, and their generations, is to help support them and their original original culture. And we have there's a project, the Women's Project specifically, that really is touches me very deeply. It's about reinstating the younger women to become mamas and elders in following the tradition of the Arawako people. And there are eight boys who want to learn the way of the elders as compared to the 500 indigenous children there who are in the government schools. Here we only have eight boys who want to learn to be the Kogi, like the mamas of the Kogi, to learn that tradition so that they can carry that forward so they don't disappear. Very fragile. These people are, it's a very fragile situation there with the culture of these people. They're on a fine line. So we're hoping to be able to help them to hold on to their culture and their law of origins and their sacred ways and their land. So I hope that the people will go to earthaction.org and to look up the Elders Project and just to see what a beautiful people they are, you know, praying for us and for the mother and taking care of the heart of the mother.
Right. You said there's eight boys, and how many young girls want to follow in the tradition, because you said there was a women's project there.
There is about 21 young girls that will be working in the Arawako community, and the eight boys are working with the Kogi community.
I see. So that's the Elders Project, and then your work specifically, because you do circles and healing gatherings to tell us how to get in touch.
Yes, they can find me on barbaratreecrow.com.
That's spell out three, right, yeah.
Threecrow, it's one word, barbaratreecrow.com. And there's information there. They can connect with me there. I have an email they can write to. And if they have any questions, I'd be glad to respond to people and I love to share and love to meet people on, you know, and put our heads together and see what we can come up with, and I'll do my best to help in any way that I can.
Right, and I think it's great what you're doing, so thank you. And
thank you, Alan, so much. This is really wonderful.
But keep us up to date on what's happening in South America. Are you planning on going back?
I will be going back. I'm actually going back to complete some ceremonies in Pasto, Colombia, in November. And I hope to be going back to the heart of the world in the Sierras, maybe either in the spring or the last part of this year. We hope to be going back because we're working to reinstate the Tani dance that hasn't been held for, as I said, 60 or 50 years. And people can find out about that also on the Elders Project. It's wonderful. There's some wonderful photos there of this very ancient dance. And this is, again, part of the work they do to reinstate the health and well-being of the earth.
Tani, how do you spell that? T-A-N-A?
T-A-N-N-I-E.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Barbara. I really appreciate your conversation tonight.
Let me just read. It's just T-A-N-I. I'm sorry. It's T-A-N-I, the Tani dance. Yeah.
Well, that sounds really amazing. I'm going to check that out, too, and I'll be in touch with you.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
I've been talking to, I'll call you this week sometime, okay?
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I've been talking to Barbara Three Crow, her website, barbara3crow.com. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, check my website, newrealities.com. Look for that Crystal Skull event that's coming up on the October 9th and 10th. And you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And I'm going to end with this song that I opened with, Chris Williamson, The Song of the Soul. Thanks for listening.
I am not dying. I am